Okay. How does this work? Here we go. Thank you for coming. So, first of all, just a correction from last week. And I realized afterwards it's too late now, but Pesach Sheni was Sunday, not Shabbos. I miscalculated on the spot. So, I apologize if you all had matzah on Shabbos and thought you were all doing Pesach Sheni. It was Sunday. There's still some matzah there left if you want to try Pesach Shlishi. So.
I think that's our box.
Is that your box?
I should have brought mine. I had two boxes.
I'd like to try to focus tonight on Lag BaOmer. As I was telling someone last night, unfortunately today I think Lag BaOmer just became like a Jewish memorial day of sorts. You know, everyone goes out and has a barbecue and sings a few songs. There's a Rockies game tomorrow night, pre-Lag BaOmer event. And I think that a lot of what Lag BaOmer is supposed to be about gets lost, probably because I think a lot of people don't really know what Lag BaOmer is about. It's the 33rd day of the Omer. So what are we celebrating? Someone died. Huh, let's party. Who died? A big rabbi. Even bigger reason to make a party. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai died. Wonderful, let's make a party. So what are we celebrating? The fact that he died? But in the Hasidic world, there is an idea to make a festival of sorts on the day that a tzaddik leaves the world. In fact, maybe we'll try to understand that. Maybe that we can tie that in. But it is a very strange notion. Normally, when a person passes away, it's a very somber, sad time for mourning. Yet we have this period of mourning, and on the day that the greatest of them all passes away, we're stopping the mourning and we're celebrating. There's also an idea brought down that on this day, the students of Rabbi Akiva did not die. So whereas during the other parts of Sphira, either the entirety of Sphira or parts of Sphira, they were dying in a plague, 24,000 students, on the 33rd day of the Omer, they did not die. And that's a reason for a celebration. Again, very puzzling. Imagine just if there's a plague, God forbid, somewhere. And one day, on that particular day, no one dies. Let's celebrate. For all time, we're going to celebrate. Okay, maybe you don't mourn that day, but what are you celebrating? The fact that no one died on that day, why is that a cause to celebrate? So again, it needs a lot of, I think, explanation. We'll try to look at some aspects of it. And also, the idea of the fire, the great bonfire, which is so prevalent in Lag BaOmer, where does that come from? Yes, it's a pyromaniac's paradise, but where does the idea come from of having a bonfire? So let's try to understand what the Yom Tov is about, what the holiday is about, what it is that we're celebrating, and we'll try to have an appreciation for the day, so that as you admire the bonfire, you can have an appreciation of what it is that you're lighting up over.
I don't think we're going to have any this year. It's supposed to rain.
Oh, this weather.
Okay, you could always do it indoors and just cover the smoke alarms. I was telling someone the other day that when I was in yeshiva as a bocher in the dormitory, we had all sorts of appliances that were not supposed to be present in the dormitory. In my room, which had some, I don't want to say troublemakers, we'll just say mischievous individuals, we had a microwave, a plug-in roaster, a toaster, other stuff also, coffee maker, that wasn't a big deal. And we had, this could really set up the smoke alarm, so we got a hold of these dust covers with which you could cover the smoke alarms. And we used to use them on a regular basis. And one day a guy came in and made popcorn in my microwave without using the dust cover and set up the smoke alarm. And the whole fire department came down. So anyways, why did I say this? I'm just saying you can make a fire inside and cover the smoke alarms with dust covers. Anyways, let's get back over here. There is another idea brought down about Lag BaOmer. Another thing that occurred, the Chasam Sofer says this. He says, in Lag BaOmer, the mon began to fall. Just the calculation for that is that our sages tell us that 30 days after the Jews left Egypt, for 30 days the matzah lasted. Okay? The matzah lasted them for 30 days following the exodus from Egypt. And then for 3 days they did not have anything to eat. And on after that, the mon fell. So on the 18th day of Iyar, which is Lag BaOmer, the mon began to fall. And that is another reason to mark the day of Lag BaOmer. And the question is, what does that have to do with with the other stuff of Lag B'Omer? Are these independent things? Are they a unified idea that we're celebrating on Lag B'Omer? So how does that play into the whole thing? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva. After the passing of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva went to the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, and he got five new students there. Those five students are among the most common names you will find in Shas: Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Nechemia. There are some versions that the last one is Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua. And they are very, very common names throughout Shas, especially the first three. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, actually the first four, and Rabbi Yossi are just all over the place. And really, they became the repository for Rabbi Akiva's Torah. Rabbi Akiva is regarded as, if you will, the father of Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, let me explain what that means for a minute, because it's a little bit puzzling. A lot of you have probably heard this idea that Rabbi Akiva is the father, the Av of Torah Shebaal Peh. One second. Moshe got the Torah at Sinai. The Torah he got was both the written and the oral. So what do you mean Rabbi Akiva is the father of Torah Shebaal Peh? Moshe is the one who brings the entire Torah down to earth. So why is Rabbi Akiva the one who is credited with it? To take this a step further, there's a passage in the Gemara which says, when Moshe went up to heaven to get the Torah, Hashem gave him a vision of Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash. We discussed this, I think, last year, Hanukkah. And Moshe was, as it were, present in Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash. Rabbi Akiva was expounding on the crowns on the tops of the letters. You ever see the inside of a Torah scroll? There are little crowns on top. He was expounding those crowns. Moshe didn't know what he was talking about. And Moshe, he felt very bad, and he said, why are you giving the Torah through me? You should give it through him. And Hashem told him, shtoik. Shtoik means quiet. Kach ol machshava. This is what came up in my thought. I don't know if I'll have time to explain that passage, but this is an idea that Hashem is telling him that there's a very, very deep hidden secret going on over here, but you're the person who's bringing the Torah down. Yet Moshe, who is bringing the entirety of Torah down to earth, doesn't know what Rabbi Akiva is talking about. Then the Gemara continues and says that one of the students asked Rabbi Akiva, what's the source for this and this idea? And he said, that's Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. That's a law that Moshe wrote down from Sinai, and then Moshe felt better. As if, like, oh, he mentioned my name. Okay, pat on the back. Everything's just hunky-dory now. It's a very puzzling passage, and I'll try to explain that as well. But obviously you see going on over here an idea that Rabbi Akiva had something very unique, which even Moshe wasn't able to comprehend. Okay? And we have to figure out how could he bring it down from Sinai, if he can't comprehend it. But Rabbi Akiva had something over here. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said on himself, basically, he said that my midos, literally midos, usually we tend to say it as like personality traits, but a mida literally means a measure. My midos, my measures, that which I express, that which I am, is the truma of the truma of Rabbi Akiva. Is the separation of the separation. In other words, in a sense, it's like the essence of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said on himself, I am the essence. I contain within myself the essence of Rabbi Akiva's Torah. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai then, to a very large degree, is the one who carries on a very important part of Rabbi Akiva. So if we can understand Rabbi Akiva, we can understand Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay, if we understand what Rabbi Akiva was and what he brought to the world, we can then have an appreciation for what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai brought to the world. If you've ever had the opportunity to explain an idea to someone that you have internalized for a very long time, by you it's a simple idea, it's a simple matter, and you're very, very familiar with it, and you have to go explain it to someone who is completely unfamiliar with it, you will discover that you have a very, very hard time doing it. Okay, just as a basic example, I remember many years ago, when I was a kid, my father bought me a book on computers. This was like back in the days of DOS 4 or something like that. And so one of the things that they were trying to explain over there in the book is when you give commands to a computer, you have to give every single command. So whereas if you have a cleaning lady, you say, take the garbage out, and she takes the garbage out. If you have a robot or a computer to take the garbage, you would have to say, extend hand, put hand on garbage bag, lift garbage bag, tie this side, tie that side. You have to explain every single step. Okay? Because in a sense, if the robot obviously is completely unfamiliar, you have to give every single step of the way. A person learns things, and more than that, we just learn things. As we internalize things, things become part of our persona, of our automatic self. We don't even think about it. It's just we understand it. Take out the garbage involves myriad steps. If you'd have to break it down, it would be hundreds of different steps involved, but it's just take out the garbage means take out the garbage. As all the husbands are told, take out the garbage. Okay, so
there's a joke there, but I'm going to leave it alone.
Okay, we'll leave it. By the way, someone over Pesach told me this joke. He said, "How many Moshes does it take to change a light bulb?" Just because you mentioned, and the answer is none. He has a staff to take care of those kinds of things. Okay, moving along. So. After everyone groans, everyone giggles. Okay, so here's an idea. Moshe Rabbeinu receives the Torah in its entirety. But Moshe Rabbeinu is at such a level where the entirety of Torah is such a basic part of him, is so internalized within him that he, within the Torah that he receives, within the Torah that he brings, and the way that he relates to it, everything is contained therein, but it's not broken down into its pieces. It's not broken down into every little step. It's at a very high level of expression because that's where Moshe's at. Moshe is connected with heaven. He lives in heaven for 40 days, three times. He is completely given over to the point where his body was nothing more than just a means for the soul to be carried through this world. The soul by him was absolutely primary. There was virtually nothing blocking between him and God. And so Moshe's relationship, Moshe's means of connecting to the Torah was such that he encapsulated the entirety of the Torah as a unit, as one big entirety, but it didn't come and it wasn't expressed through him in pieces. It wasn't expressed through him as being able to see all the broken down pieces and steps and every little bit that the Torah contains within it. Okay? That is how Moshe brings the Torah down, and that's what you might call Torah Shebikhtav, the written Torah. Because the written Torah is the external expression which contains within it all the pieces. So if I say take out the garbage, that's just an external expression which contains within it all these little steps. Right, and by the same token, if the Torah says, "Thou shalt not kill," "Thou shalt not steal," whatever it may be, that may just seem like an external expression. It's just, yeah, you know, that's just don't steal, don't kill. But really, contained therein are countless, infinite pieces of Torah which are not being expressed because Moshe relates to it at such a high level that it's just here. It is, don't steal. Don't you understand everything else that's contained therein? Well, no, I'm not Moshe, so I don't. The further away you move from Sinai, from Moshe's level, the further away you move, the more it needs to get broken down. Okay? And really, where you come to a critical point where it switches, where you move from a state of where the Torah can be related to from its external manifestation. Here's the Torah, and I see the external, and I'm able to connect to the internal part, all the stuff lying below the surface, to the point where I can't connect to it unless it's broken down, it's expressed, I have a means to get to the inside. Where does that really occur? After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. After the destruction of the Second Temple is really, it begins, and this really is a Hanukkah talk, it begins with Hanukkah, with the Greeks, and so on. But really, where it gets to the point, to the total point where you're in gullus, you're in exile, everything's dark, everything's terrible, where you're far, far away from living directly with Hashem, directly with the Torah, where now I'm at a point where I'm far away, where I can't get to the internal just by relating to the external, is after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Who lived during that period? Rabbi Akiva. Rav Akiva was alive, actually, at the time of the destruction of the second temple. And Rav Akiva is the one in exile, in Golos, who's going to, within the darkness, say, everything's dark. I'm looking at this and I don't see anything. You know, it used to be, you looked at the external and everything was expressed. Certainly in the first temple era, you have prophecy and so on. There was no official, let me just give an example. There was no official system of brachas till the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay, people made blessings, but there wasn't an official system of making blessings till the second Beis HaMikdash, because the men of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, they established the idea of making brachas. Because when you live in an era of prophecy where God connects to the world, you don't necessarily need to make a blessing. What's a blessing? Here's an apple. Where did this apple come from? Well, over the course of billions of years, there was once this little thing, one day just popped, it was an amoeba, and then it decided to evolve into an apple. How did that happen? Good question. We could talk about it some other time. Huh? So, if I'm looking at an apple, and I see the external, but the external itself expresses the internal, I don't need to say this came from God. It's there. It expresses it. I live with that. I don't need to talk about it. But when you move into a world of exile, where the external no longer expresses the internal, you can't just read the verses in the Torah, in the written Torah, and automatically connect with the internal part of the Torah, with the deeper levels, then now you need to break it down into the pieces. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was on the mountain and Hashem showed him the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva is expounding the crowns and the letters, Moshe doesn't know what he's talking about. It's because Moshe never lives in that reality. So whereas by Moshe it might be simple, but Moshe never lives in a reality of where he's dealing with all the pieces. He experiences the whole thing as a whole, as a totality of everything of the Torah. But he doesn't live in a world where he can relate to all the pieces as being little pieces that have to be expressed piece by piece individually. Rabbi Akiva lives in that world. That's the world of Torah Shebal Peh, where the Torah Shebal Peh is expressed in of itself, each piece, each part, the internal part of the Torah, everything below the surface. That's Rabbi Akiva. That is Rabbi Akiva's world. That's the world of Rabbi Akiva, and that's the world that Moshe can't live in, because that's not where he's at. So he's bringing that down, but he's not expressing it. And he doesn't relate to it in that fashion. Why did he feel better when Moshe said, this is Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim? In other words, once a student said, where did this come from? And he said, this is Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. In other words, Moshe brought this down also. So while it may be true that Moshe can't live in that world, but Moshe then realizes that the Torah that he's bringing contains within it the world of Rabbi Akiva as well. Just he's on too high of a level. He's in a whole different place to be able to relate to it and to express it. That is the world of Rabbi Akiva. That is the world of Rabbi Akiva. Now, if you think about it in a deeper sense, when you talk about exile, and when you talk about, we discussed last week the idea that the month of Iyar, the days of Sfira, our work is to, on our own, to try to overcome it, to try to work, to try to achieve our purpose in a world where Hashem is not pouring down on us His kindness. He's not giving it to us for free. Pesach was the time, we said last week, where Hashem gives it to us for free. He pours down upon us His kindness, His goodness. The Jewish people at the sea reach very high levels. That's Pesach. The work of Sfiras HaOmer, of the month of Iyar, is the work of do it on your own. Now you're going to be thrust into darkness. Now you're thrust into a desert. There's nothing there. You have to work on it. You have to overcome. You have to take the world yourself, and you have to reveal that greatness of Hashem. You have to reveal that presence of Hashem in the darkness. You have to take the darkness and show there's really light hiding in that darkness. You have to crack it open on your own. Difficult. How much light can you expose? But that's the work of Sfira. That's the work of Sfira, and that's really the work of Rabbi Akiva. The work of Rabbi Akiva is everything is dark. I don't see anything. Where is it? It's all hidden. But Rabbi Akiva is the one who comes, and Rabbi Akiva is the one who exposes that. Rabbi Akiva is the one who brings that up from the darkness through his work, through his toil, and he's the one who brings it out. That Torah Shebal Peh that's lying latent beneath the surface in the darkness, he has to bring that out. You know where you see this most clearly is his death. How did Rabbi Akiva die? How did Rabbi Akiva die? Rabbi Akiva is imprisoned by the Romans. He's taken out and he's flayed alive. Okay, and as he's being tortured to death, he's reciting Shema. Right, and it says the angels said to Hashem, "Zu Torah v'zu Schara. Is this a Torah and is this its reward?" And Hashem said, "Shtoik, kach olam achshav l'fanai. Be quiet. This is what came up in thought before me." The basic idea behind this conversation is this. The angels say, look, in the world of reward and punishment, excuse me, in the world of where things make sense, where we can relate to it, where the Torah says, V'hayim shemoy atishim wel mitzvayisa, if you listen to my commandments, everything will be great, everything will be hunky-dory, everything will be wonderful. In that world, this makes no sense. Rabbi Akiva studied your Torah, he did everything he's supposed to do, and this is what he gets. And Hashem said, what's Hashem answering to them? That's not Rabbi Akiva's world. That's not Rabbi Akiva's world. Rabbi Akiva's world is not the world of where things make sense, where everything's exposed, revealed, clear and bright. The world of Rabbi Akiva is the world where he goes into the darkness, and within the darkness he's going to bring forth where it doesn't look like there's anything there, where it makes no sense at all. Where you don't see, where you can't relate, you can't connect to this. What does this mean? I don't see, perceive anything. And Rabbi Akiva comes along, and Rabbi Akiva says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that Hashem is here also. You don't see Hashem here. It doesn't make sense to you. Zu Torah v'zu Schar, is this a Torah and is this its reward? And Rabbi Akiva comes, and Rabbi Akiva says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hashem's here also. Everything is Hashem. Even when you don't see Hashem, Hashem is here. And so that's the work of Rabbi Akiva. The work of Rabbi Akiva is to take everything which is far away, which is hidden, which doesn't openly reveal the light of Hashem, and to take all of that and to show Hashem's here also. That was his work as far as Torah Shebal Peh, and that's his work in his life as well, in a broader sense. Let's talk about Kabbalah for a few minutes. Kabbalah today is very popularized. I think it's probably part of pop culture to a degree. There are people who have Kabbalah centers and all sorts of silly things like that. Celebrities go there, and so on and so forth. What is Kabbalah? What is it? Kabbalah, especially the Kabbalah which Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai brought to the world. Okay. On the day of his death, is the idea of bringing out the reality that everything is Hashem. Okay, what we call in Lashon Kodesh in Hebrew, Yichud Hashem. Yichud Hashem. The idea of Yichud Hashem doesn't mean Hashem is the only God. It means everything is Hashem. Everything traces back. Everything connects back to Hashem. So everything in the world has a way to connect back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Hashem. Okay? When we talk about, just as an idea, we say, Meloi Chol Aretz Kevod. The entire world is full of His Kavod. I'll try to translate that word Kavod in a second. It's commonly translated as honor, but more about that in a second. Another verse, which is in Pirkei Avos, the last Mishnah in the sixth Perek, where Hashem says, everything that I created in the world, I created for my Kavod. I made it for my kavod. So normally it means honor. So Hashem says, I made everything so you should honor me. So like, God needs my honor. He needs me to honor Him. Kavod, I heard this once from Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, the Rosh Yeshiva, founder of Yeshiva of Shai Yashiv. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, I once heard a recording of a shir, he said, kavod comes from the word kaved, not liver, but kaved meaning heavy. Heavy. Meaning, kavod is the idea of realizing what something really is. What something really is. Someone who runs after kavod runs away from him. It's not just a reality, which it is. But the idea is, kavod is the reality of what something is. If I'm running after kavod, it's not really by me. If I'm trying to get people to recognize me, if I'm running after kavod, what that says is that I'm trying to be something I'm not. That is the absolute antithesis of kavod. Real kavod is the recognition of what something is inherently. giving someone else kavod is realizing what that person is, what that person's positive qualities are, what that person's role in the world is. Okay, that's the idea of kavod. Giving someone kavod is not telling them stuff which is not true about them, that might boost their self-esteem in some situations. But real kavod is the idea that I am recognizing what you are, what your role is, what your purpose is. That's real kavod. Everything in the world, as I just said, has the potential to reveal Hashem. And really, that's what we're here for. We're here to come to a recognition that everything in the world is nothing more than Hashem. And when we talk about Mashiach coming and making everything wonderful, and you know, someday we'll all be together, someday we'll be sheltered and warm, never will we have to express any fears, etc., etc., etc. That yes, that is part of Mashiach's coming. That's not the bottom line. That's not the purpose. That's part and parcel. That's not the purpose. The purpose of Mashiach coming is the point of bringing the world back and reconnecting it to Hashem. Olam Haba, okay, Olam Haba is existence being in the presence of Hashem, and the way, and not just basking in His glory, the way we live in the presence of Hashem is by recognizing Hashem, is by having an awareness of Hashem. The more we have an awareness of Hashem, the closer we are to Him. Olam Haba is living in a realm where we have a greater and greater and greater awareness, recognition, understanding, as it were, of Hashem. And the more we recognize that He is all there is, and everything in the world just connects back to Him, and there's nothing else besides Him, the more we move towards the time of Mashiach, and beyond that into the world of Olam Haba. But that's what Kabbalah is. Kabbalah is, the purpose of Kabbalah is taking the internal. Because if I look at a world, I see it's a nice table, it's nice trees, it's nice rain, it's a nice couch. And all I see, a couch. What is a couch? Well, it's something I could sink down into and spend a lot of hours doing nothing in. Okay, what's a table? Something I can eat on, you know, or give a shear on. But recognizing what's under the surface, recognizing what's under the surface, is a step further. I don't know if it was Rabbi Freifeld or someone else. It wasn't. I don't think it was a shear I heard. I don't recall from whom, that the Tzemach Tzedek, I think in the Baal HaTanya, the Baal HaTanya was the founder of Chabad Hasidus. I believe his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek, were getting ready to daven. And so the Baal HaTanya asked his grandson, with what are you going into davening with? Like, what are you walking into the prayers with? How are you preparing yourself? And he said, I don't remember exactly, but something to the effect of, he's contemplating how the entire world is filled with Hashem's glory, and I don't remember exact words he used. And then he asked his grandfather, what are you? And he said, he was like holding onto a bench, the bench in front of him, as he got ready to pray. And he said, I'm going into davening with this bench. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? The way I understand it is, everything in the world expresses Hashem. So, I can use a bench that's in front of me to recognize Hashem as well. So when I'm about to stand before Hashem, the bench becomes my means of recognizing everything is Hashem. This bench is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? Now, that might be a somewhat controversial statement that may be germane to, specific to some of the Baal HaTanya's thoughts versus some of the other people of the time.
Energy.
What?
It's energy. And all energy was created from
Hebrew
letters.
Okay, that is true, but it's more than just that. You are correct. It's more than, yes, but you're right, it's the letters, and I don't want to go into that now. You're right, it's the letters that become the object. You are correct.
You can think of it also in terms, in a scientific term, of protons, electrons,
right,
and neutrons. So if everything is Hashem, then all protons, electrons, and neutrons, atoms, molecules, spinning around each other, are Hashem. And then in a minute, like, all he has to say is, done, and it's
not there anymore.
Stop spinning.
Correct. That is correct. But I think it's a bit deeper than just that. You are correct in terms of breaking it down, in terms of the letters in a spiritual sense, and you know, the molecules and the atoms and the protons and neutrons and quarks and antimatter, whatever is there, going into that as well. But in a spiritual sense, it's the fact that really everything here is simply a spiritual means to reveal Hashem's greatness. Okay? So we don't see it that way, but that's our job, that's our mission. And the study of Kabbalah is moving in that direction. The study of Kabbalah is the study of understanding how everything in the world connects back to Hashem. Okay? So now, we started off saying that Rabbi Akiva is the one who's able to bring this out. Rabbi Akiva is the father of Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning Rabbi Akiva is the one who, when the external world no longer reflects the internal reality that's driving it, that exists, that is the true reality, Rabbi Akiva is the one who's going to express it. Rabbi Akiva is the one who's going to bring out that light. To the point where at his death, he brings out to the greatest point, where the event which seems to be the farthest away from Hashem, someone who's spent his entire life dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is being tortured to death, is the ultimate antithesis, seemingly, of the presence of Hashem in the world, to the point where the angels themselves say, "What is going on here? This makes no sense." Okay? And Hashem says, "Be quiet. Kach ola b'machshav lefanai." This is what came up in thought before me. Now, the idea of thought, let's talk about the idea of thought. But understand this. Rabbi Akiva thus, in his death, brings out the greatest revelation, in a sense, of that, as he says Shema, it wasn't happenstance that he said Shema. The Shema was bringing the event, that is the close of his life. That's his entire life's work. Is that it looks like the farthest away from Hashem. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And he died as he finished the word Echad. In other words, he united the event with Hashem. This event that's so far from Hashem, Rabbi Akiva says, it's not. It may look like it's far away, but it's not. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And so Rabbi Akiva's death becomes the greatest revelation of his life's work. That of taking what looks dark, what looks far away, and bring it out, and bring out Yichud Hashem, and showing that everything traces back to Hashem. If a person has gone through a very, very traumatic experience, people who went through the Holocaust, many people, don't talk about it. Right? Why don't they talk about it? They don't talk about it because it defies being put into words. Why? When something is put into words, it's limited. It becomes finite. Right? Something which cannot be expressed, be it joy, great joy also cannot be expressed, or great sadness cannot be expressed in words. Because it's too big, it's too broad, it's too infinite to express in words. Words, expression, takes something and breaks it down. Okay? That's one idea, that if you hear something very wonderful that you want to internalize, don't talk about it so much. Work on it, think about it, internalize it. And then, after you internalize it, then it can express itself. But as soon as you talk about it, that's it. It just falls apart. Because now all it is just the words that you put to it. So, if you have a bunch of Kol guys fighting out a piece of Gemara, and there are a lot of words being thrown around, that's because Gemara is the external expression of the Torah. It's the external expression. And so it can be put into words. You can express it through words. The great Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik said, if you can't express it in words, you don't have a proper understanding of it. An inability to express it is an inability in understanding. In Yiddish / Hebrew, he said, a chisaron in hasbara is a chisaron in havana. A lack of expressing it is a lack of understanding. That's true for external. Because that's exactly what it is. It's external. External, by definition, is something which can be put into words. And if you can't put it into words, you don't really have it in your mind. Because the external thought is just the mind being put into words. But the idea of machshav, of thought, thought doesn't just mean I'm thinking and not saying it. The idea of thought is that which is contained within me, but is much bigger than what I can put into words. Okay? Kabbalah is the internal, which is not meant to be expressed externally. It's that part of Torah which is greater than what is just expressed outwards through words. Kabbalah is something which you have to experience, in a sense, which has to become a part of you. In order to understand it, in order to encapsulate it, in order to have an appreciation, it has to become a part of you, because you're there, you're living it. A person who didn't go through the Holocaust, God forbid, no, none of us ever know from it, can't possibly appreciate what it was just by hearing stories about it. You hear all the stories in the world. And you can't possibly understand what those people went through, because it's something which had to be gone through. The same way it can't be expressed by those who lived through it, it can never be appreciated for how horrible it was by those who didn't live through it, by those who didn't experience it. And so Kabbalah, in a sense, the danger of the or I should say, the tragedy in today's day and age of Kabbalah, of just, it's, you know, let's just talk about it and so on. The tragedy is that that's all it is, just a bunch of words for people's entertainment or feel good, whatever. But that's not what it is. Kabbalah is the internal part of the Torah. It's the part of the Torah which doesn't express itself in words. It's the part of the Torah which you have to be there to really get it. And if you're not at that level, if you're not living there, if you're not at the level of what it has to offer, so all the words in the world, not only will they not give it over to you, it'll just cheapen it. It's just limiting it. It's just saying, what's Kabbalah? Oh, I'll tell you this idea and that idea and that idea. You know, a bunch of years ago, across from the Kol Beis Medrash, on our third floor on the west side, some lady opened up a practice, a psychiatric practice or something. It was very strange. Long story. But to make a long story short, the hallway became her waiting room, and she had some books. One of the books was called Kabbalah for Dummies. Very fascinating. It was a list of the top 10 Kabbalists. There were some very interesting names on there. I'm not going to go into it now. But it really kind of expresses what I'm trying to say. Kabbalah for Dummies. Kabbalah for Dummies means, yeah, you can also appreciate Kabbalah. You're a dummy, but you can appreciate it. Here's what it's about. That is the absolute, the whole idea of Kabbalah is, it's beyond expression. It's beyond what you can possibly express. It's beyond what you can express with words. It's something which you have to experience it. You have to experience it in order to be able to appreciate it. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who hides in the cave for 12 years plus another year on top of that. And again, a lot more to talk about with the whole cave episode, but it's not for now. And in a sense, devotes himself completely to Torah, removes himself completely from this world, and in a sense, Rabbi Gedalia Shor points out, in a sense, he went through the process of receiving the Torah again, because just as the Jews went through the desert and were fed by Hashem by the man, and basically the man. Now let's go back to the man. The man, the Ramban says, is food of the angels. Not to be confused with any sort of cakes, is angel food. What is angel food? What do angels eat? Yes, the angels came to Avram, but they didn't eat the food. The food that angels eat is, they are sustained directly by being in the presence of Hashem, by having a realization or a connection to Hashem Himself. They are sustained through that. That's their sustenance. That's how they exist. And the man, says the Ramban, is that sustenance that the angels have through their understanding, through their perception of Hashem. That perception, that connection, is what keeps them alive. That's a connection to the source of all life. When I know something, when I understand something, when I have a connection, so that allows, that creates a connection. When you don't know somebody, when you have a relationship with somebody, you're connected, right? You say, I'm connected to this person. When you know somebody, when you have an appreciation for somebody, whereas when you don't know somebody at all, so then you're not connected. The idea of knowing somebody is to have a connection with that person. You have a connection with the individual. And to know Hashem, to have an appreciation of Hashem, is to have a connection, to be able to be in the presence, as it were, of Hashem. The more I know of Hashem, the closer I can be to Him, the more of a connection I have. The angels exist because of their, what we call hasaga, because of their realization, their perception of Hashem, that's what allows them to exist. And the Jewish people in the desert, Hashem gave them that food, as it were, that spiritual sustenance that gives life to the angels, was manifest in a physical form, and the Jews ate that. And that's the food the Jewish people have to eat in order to receive the Torah. Our sages say that the Torah was only given to a generation that ate, to people that ate the man. Because, there are a lot of different ways to explain this, because the man is a food, it's a sustenance which is inherently a connection to Hashem. I'm living through my connection to Hashem. We eat food. We eat food, and we put it in our mouths and in our stomachs and so on. And that allows the body and the soul to stay together. But when you're in a higher level, you don't need to come out of the physical food to allow the body and soul to stay together, to allow life to exist. When you're connected straight to Hashem, when you're at that closeness of a level, so then Hashem Himself, being in the presence of Hashem Himself, allows you to exist. How did Moshe live for 40 days in the mountain? Didn't eat, didn't drink. But he's 40 years with Hashem. So the being in the presence of Hashem Himself allows him to exist. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lives at a similar level. He hides in the cave. He has no food. What happens? Miraculously, a carob tree sprouts up. I don't know why, but for some reason, carobs seem to be the most minimal, basic sustenance in the world. Rabbi Hanina Ben Dosa also is a person who, the Gemara says, subsisted on a bare minimum. It says he subsisted on a cob of carobs every week.
It's chocolate.
Huh?
It's chocolate.
Yeah. They were men. Doesn't work.
We were talking about solar food. Solar food.
It's S-O-U-L.
Not physical food.
It's soul food.
Soul food. I mean, it's that's what...
But it is correct. Yeah.
Solar.
S-O-U-L. S-O-U-L. Yeah.
Solar,
yeah.
Sun.
I got it. Rabbi Eitan Feiner, who's a rav in the White Shul in Far Rockaway, if you've ever heard him speak, he is absolutely amazing to listen to. He makes the following point. There's an idea which we don't really paskin like, but there is an opinion that you can fulfill the obligation of Shal Shudis through studying Torah. Okay? We don't rule that way. You've got to eat something. But there's a he also says over a story, famous story with Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz. Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz was known for his dedication to Torah study around the clock. He used to go for like 24 hours straight, just learn straight, 24 hours, 36 hours, whatever. He would just keep learning. So he would eat Shal Shudis. So they asked him, Rebbe, you know, you of all people can rely on the opinion that Shal Shudis you can fulfill with the words of Torah. He said, look, if I study Torah, he said, if I say a nice shtickle Torah, a piece of Torah, if someone has a question on it, so I lose the shtickle Torah. I lose it. Yeah? So I don't have Shal Shudis anymore because the piece of Torah that I put together I lost. He said, but you can't ask a kasha, you can't ask a question on a piece of gefilte fish. So piece of gefilte fish is a piece of gefilte fish. But who's the one who says that you can fulfill the obligation of Shal Shudis with Torah? It says it in the Zohar, which is given over by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who says you can fulfill Shal Shudis with Torah study. Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one, he's the epitome of the one who dedicates himself solely to Torah. 12 years he's in the cave, what's he doing? Studying Torah day and night. He's not busy with food, Hashem gives him the food. That's his man. He's going to be the one to bring out into the world the internal part of the Torah. The essence of Rabbi Akiva. The internal part, that which Rabbi Akiva dedicated his life to. Rabbi Akiva dedicated in a much broader sense, the entirety of the Torah. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is going to bring out the absolute internal part of the Torah. That which most greatly expresses the oneness of Hashem, that which we call Kabbalah, by the way, it's called, the part that he gave over on his deathbed, it's called Idra Zuta. That's what it's called. And Idra Zuta focuses more on anything, any other part of Kabbalah, focuses solely on Yichud Hashem, the oneness of Hashem. Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who could bring that Torah into the world. He's the one who, as the Jewish people in the desert ate the man, dedicated themselves solely to Torah, were able to rise to that level of getting beyond the external, world, of living at a level where they're connected to Hashem and they're living off of Hashem, as it were, directly with Hashem. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is going to do the same thing. Now, whereas the Jewish people lived at a level where they could express the external, they could bring a Torah into the world that's external, and everything else is contained therein. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is going to be the one who, in a world of darkness, is going to express the internal part directly. Because you can't go through the external anymore. So he's going to be the one who's going to bring out the internal part. When does it happen? When he dies. Why specifically when he dies? So, it's brought down in the name of the Vilna Gaon that when a person passes away, the life's work concentrates and reaches its peak. On the day that a person dies, the point when a person leaves this world, that's when the entire life is concentrated into one moment, to one point. Everything that a person did is right there at the point, at the moment where a person is leaving this world. So as Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is leaving this world, his whole life, he's containing this Torah within him. But remember, this is not a Torah which can just be expressed. outwardly. Let me teach this to you the way I'll teach you a piece of Gemara or, you know, or a pasuk in Chumash. This is something which can't be expressed. So his entire life he can't express it. But as he's leaving the world, at that point when everything comes to a head, there's the opportunity to bring it out, to express it in the world. Here's the opportunity where the whole life is contained within himself, because he's stuck here in this world, in a world of where things are finite, where things are limited. So to express that which is infinite in a finite world, in the world just to speak, that's not possible. But as he's leaving the world, as his soul leaves his body, as he moves on, so there's the opportunity to take that which is contained within him and can't be expressed outwardly in a finite world, as he moves into an infinite world, here's the opportunity for that experience, if you will, for that information which can only be shared via experience, he can now share it with the world, because now he's moving into a world of infinite. He's moving into a world of where everything is Hashem. He's moving into a world of where things aren't finite and hidden. So as he moves into that world, that's the opportunity for that Torah to be expressed. And hence, the point of death is the only opportunity he's going to have to bring that out to the world. And just like Rabbi Akiva, as he died, brings the greatest revelation of Hashem's oneness into the world, because the death of Rabbi Akiva, as tragic as it seems to us, Rabbi Akiva says, this is not tragedy, this is wonderful. And by the way, once I'm at it, I'll just connect the famous story everyone knows. Rabbi Akiva is sitting on the Temple Mount with his colleagues, and a fox runs out from the Holy of Holies, and all his colleagues cry, and he laughs. Right? Because Rabbi Akiva is the one who can see from the greatest tragedy, he could say, this is going to bring out, I can see within the greatest tragedy, he's the one who sees the greatest revelation of Hashem. And so, where does the greatest revelation occur? In his death. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the student of Rabbi Akiva, the one who's bringing out the essence of Rabbi Akiva, he has an opportunity at his death. And so the point of his death is really the point of where Hashem's oneness is expressed in the greatest degree, and thus his death is not necessarily a tragedy. We may perceive it as a tragedy, but now, as he's dying, he gives his Torah over. So we in this world have a chance to experience his death as an opportunity of expression of Torah. That's a cause for celebration. Normally, death is a tragedy. But when an individual has reached a level where death is not a tragedy, on the contrary, he lives at a level where death is an opportunity for greater revelation, so then that person's death, where we live it, we experience it, he shares it with the world, we all become a part of that experience, that's a cause for celebration. What does that have to do with Rabbi Akiva's students? Rabbi Akiva's students, as I discussed a little bit last week, had a mission to express their Rebbe's Torah, to bring their Rebbe's Torah to absolute completion. Their Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. And in order to do that, as I mentioned last week, each one had to work on his own part of Torah. 24,000 Talmidim, all of them had to work on their own part of Torah. But as I mentioned last week, what they had to do was to take all their individual parts that they all had to express. The work of Ir is the work of me bringing out my purpose, but at the same time being aware that it's not about me. So they had to take their work and their part and reconnect it back together as a whole. Right? And there was a failure, again, at their very high level, there was a failure for them to reconnect to everyone else. Hence, they failed to properly respect each other. Not that they were fighting or you know, dissing each other or being not nice, but that at their level they failed to reconnect their individual expressions of Torah together for the whole. As the Jewish people did at Sinai, Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, as one man with one heart, they had to do the same thing, and they weren't able to get there. They weren't able to do that. But on Lag BaOmer is the day where there's this spiritual power of expressing oneness, of where everything in the world now expresses Hashem's greatness. So Lag BaOmer is a very specific day where, yes, the work of Sfira is to bring out the power of every single individual person. But Lag BaOmer is, and if I have 2 minutes, I'll try to expand on this a bit more, but Lag BaOmer is the beginning of a period, is the first day where Hashem's oneness is expressed through the work that's been done till now of each individual, now it comes back together. Each person expresses his work in Torah, and Lag BaOmer is the beginning of a period where all that work of every individual now comes back together into oneness. And where Hashem's oneness is brought out into the world, as we've discussed till now. That's what the whole Kabbalah is about. That's what Rebbe Akiva was coming to do. That's what Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai was coming to express. That's the power of Lag BaOmer. And so on that day of oneness, there was no death due to the separation between the students. This is a day whose spiritual power was to unite everything. And so on that day, even Rebbe Akiva's students, where they failed to unite together, there was a unity through the spiritual power of that day, and therefore the students didn't die. Okay? Now, why Lag BaOmer specifically? So just briefly, because I'm out of time as always, just briefly, Sfira is split into three parts. It's split into three parts. Basically, you have a period of 32 days and then a period of 17 days. Total of 49. 49 days altogether. For all you mathematicians out there. So it's a total of 49 days. But really, it's split into three, 16, 16, and 17. Okay? And Rabbi Gedalia Shor again says that these three periods correspond to the three pillars the world stands on. Torah, Avoda, Gemilas Chasadim. But really, Torah is the last period. So, Gemilas Chasadim and Avoda are the parts that we do. Chesed and Din. Right? We discussed last week. Avoda is Din, is putting everything exactly where it belongs, you know, limiting everything exactly what it's supposed to be. Torah is the perfect balance. But Torah really is the final period. Once you've gone through the first two, you have that last period. And that last period really is that after we've done our work, so now the light of Torah starts to shine through. Once we've done the work of Chesed, we've done the work of Din, working on it for those first 32 days, beginning of Lag BaOmer, we still have to work. But the work now is the work of appreciating the light that Hashem gives us. We've done all the work. It was hard. It was difficult. We took a world that hid Hashem's presence, and we brought forth Hashem's wondrousness, Hashem's oneness from it. Now, take that oneness and appreciate it. Bask in it. The light of Torah starts to come forth from Hashem. The way it's expressed in some places is that that the Torah starts to come from Sinai at this point. Okay? And the work, as Rabbi Moshe Shapiro expresses it, is that you had 32 days of the work, and now you have the rest of the time of the schar, of the reward. Meaning, now that you went through the hard part, the work, the bringing out the covet of Hashem from the world, this last period is a period of working on now getting back, taking the recognition that all this is Hashem and reconnecting it. Hashem now starts to shine forth. I revealed the oneness of Hashem. Now that you did the work, reconnect it. Now let Hashem come back towards you, shine His light on you, and you have to come back towards that and appreciate it and take all the work you did and reconnect it back with Hashem. So that's the last period. When does that period start? When you finished all the work. When you went through the period of Sfira, the first 32 days of bringing out that everything in this world is for Hashem, the last period is now we have a world, if you will, a state of recognition of Hashem's oneness. Now reconnect it back with Hashem. You took everything, you overcame it, you exposed what it is, now reconnect it, now you get to enjoy the fruits of your labor. That's the last period. That's the period of oneness of Hashem. That starts in Lag BaOmer. That's the day when the internal part of Torah is revealed. That's what happens with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's why he dies on that day, and that's why it's a Yom Tov. That's why the Talmidim don't die on that day. So it's not a Yom Tov because they didn't die. It's the power of that day. It's the power of the Yichud Hashem, which is expressed, which really, in a sense, is the beginning of the ultimate revelation of Hashem with the coming of Mashiach. So in a sense, the crack that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai opens up for us, which, yes, maybe we're not at, and yes, you have to be careful, stay away from Kabbalah, because it's not something you could just talk about. You have to be there, you have to live it, you have to express it. And if not, it's a terrible tragedy. You're just taking it and dragging it through the mud. You're taking the greatest thing and you're just squashing it. You're limiting it. But it's a crack which opens the door towards much greater things down the line. And the last period is a period of us appreciating the Torah that Hashem gives us. It's a period of where we take everything, we did all the work, and Hashem says, you did a great job, and now I'm going to come towards you, and you have to It's really the way it's expressed is that the first period is a period of year of fear, of the last period is a period of Ava. Ava means that now I can appreciate it. Now I can bask in the glow of what I've done, of my relationship with Hashem, after I've done all the work. That's the last period of Sfiras HaOmer that begins a Lag BaOmer. Okay? And that's the period that we start moving through, starting with Lag BaOmer. I'll just end with this. Why a fire? Why a fire? Because just one idea and one aspect. It says that as he died, so a fire enveloped him. A fire enveloped him. As he gave over this teaching to his students, as he was dying, a fire enveloped him. What was this fire? The fire is not just the fire of Torah, but it's a fire in the sense that we know that in Parshas Bereishis, it says that Hashem created a light, a special light, and he hid that light away. Where did he hide that light? For Lasa Lavi, for the Tzaddikim in the next world. What's that light? That light is a light which allows us to see things as they really are. No, it's not a light like a light bulb. It's a light because we live in the world of spiritual darkness. We don't see things for what they are. We see things externally, and the external doesn't reveal what's inside. So we don't have an appreciation for what things really are. We can't see things properly, in their proper light. The Or HaGanuz, the light that Hashem hides away, is the light that allows us to see things as they really are. To see that everything is really HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To allow us to have an appreciation and understanding of Hashem. That's the light which is hidden away. Why is it hidden away? Because Rishon will abuse it. Because a Rasha will see that, will see that great light, will see the great spirituality, and he'll drag it through the mud. He'll open a Kabbalah center, whatever he's going to do with it. That's what a Rasha is going to do. Okay, but a tzaddik will use it to come close to Hashem. And so that's the light that's the fire that surrounds Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. As he's bringing this out to the world, there's a little bit of that light coming out into the world. That's the light of Mashiach. That's the light of the next world. And that light, the door opens a crack. As Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai opens it just a crack for us to give us a little bit of that light in our dark world and says, here's the world of Mashiach. Here's the world where Hashem is one and His name is one and there's nothing else besides Him. Here's this Idris Zuta which expresses that. That's the fire that surrounds Him and that's the fire that people make on Lag BaOmer is because of that great light that He brought into the world. It's not to make barbecues. Okay, if you want to make a barbecue, that's fine. But that's not what Lag BaOmer is about. Lag BaOmer is about realizing, recognizing that as we move through Sfira, we're moving towards a world where there's nothing besides Hashem. It starts with Matan Torah. Starts with Matan Torah. As we say in the pasuk, you have been ataris ladaski Hashem huelakim ein oid milvadoi. The Jewish people saw that you have been shown to see that Hashem is the ultimate power. There is nothing else besides Him, and it's a long, long, tortuous journey. But eventually, it takes a bad turn into exile. But there's the light that's opened up with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which carries us, which opens the door a little bit and carries us till Mashiach comes. And as Mashiach approaches, you see a proliferation of study of Kabbalah, even proper study of Kabbalah, much, much greater today than it was hundreds of years ago. Okay, and a lot of people say the reason for that is because as we approach the era of Mashiach, it has to move in that direction. It has to move in that direction. We have to now bring ourselves to the point where we're not just talking about it, because that's not really an appreciation of it, but we're actually living it. We're actually living in a world where we are living a life where there's nothing else besides Hashem. Thank you for coming. Good evening.